It's 5 o'clock in Pirate Country, and it's time to get pumped up with the P-Man. Hit the door and hit the road. 94.3 The Game is going to get you home, and the P-Man's not holding back.
Yes! Yes! Pirates win! Pirates win!
Bring on the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Holy mackerel! Oh, my goodness!
The flagship station of the ECU Pirates. And now, Patrick Johnson with today's Pirate Report on the flagship station of the ECU Pirates, 94.3 The Game.
Okay, seamless production right there. Welcome in, everybody. It is the Patrick Johnson Show. We've got Pirate Baseball against Old Dominion coming up. ECU will look to avenge a loss to the Monarchs in late February, where everybody lost their marbles because ODU hit a walk-off home run in the ninth inning and handed Wyatt Luntzer-Chinkman his first loss. And the common thread then was, well, we don't have a bullpen in Greenville. But they obviously have stepped up because they combined for a no-hitter. And this was just a couple weeks after missing out on a combined no-hitter by one out. Those that were the hearty souls on a lovely evening last night that went to that game against Elon got to see not only a 12-0 game, they got to see Jaden Winter and Chris Kaler and the debuting Parker Thomas combine for a 7-inning no-no. And so that was what went down last night. ODU and ECU tonight. Let's start with Coach Godwin's comments in our Pirate Report on the no-no combined by the guys that have had roles out of the pen. Hit it.
Yeah, you know, it was crucial. You got two games this week, midweek. Bullpen's a little thin. No Schenkman, no Jake Hunter, you know, in the middle of the week. And Jaden went out there and gave us a quality start. We weren't planning on him to go four innings, but he did. And then we passed the ball to Chris Kaler, and Chris looked back like himself. And then, of course, Parker Thomas gets his first career outing out there and keeps the no-hitter intact. So super proud of the pitching staff.
All right, not only was the pitching staff able to put together this combined no-no, but the way the Pirates hit the ball, they raced out big early. It was fourth inning, they were up 11-0, and I walked into the control room for ESPN Plus after the softball team lost to Duke, and ECU was just knocking the ball all over the park. In fact, when we left the ballpark, left Joyner Stadium, we heard the cannon and heard the roar. So there was a home run, or actually in the other order. We heard the roar and then the cannon. So ECU had homered, and the Pirates at the plate were, again, locked in.
Yeah, I thought Riley Johnson set the tone. I mean, anytime he gets on base in that first inning, it just makes it hard on the other team for us not to score. And, you know, Carter hits a ball deep to left center. Riley tags, and then JC gets him in. You know, just really good job, and a couple home runs. You know, Bristol Carter hitting a three-run homer. Carter Cunningham hitting a home run, and Ryan McChrystal. So guys kept adding on, and a lot of quality bats. And just happy we were able to get most of our position players in the game and get those guys out there. Nick Parham, Nate Chrisman, Cam Clonch, Walker Barron, Chaz Myers, a lot of guys, Janesco. So that was good.
Yeah, it was. Parm got in about the fifth inning, I guess. I remember seeing him on the screen in the control room while we were talking about the game. Coach G on getting those younger guys in.
It's a long season, Coach O. And, I mean, you look at, you know, we've missed Starling for four games. So the more times we can get guys out there because you can't prevent yourself from getting injuries at times. I mean, Shaq seems like he's getting hit. I mean, he got hit Sunday. I mean, his arm's still swollen, his throwing arm, from getting hit on Sunday, and then gets hit in the hamstring today. So, you know, just trying to keep our guys as fresh as possible.
Fabulous start by Jaden Winter, and he talked about the no-no as he went four strong in it.
Yeah, that was awesome. Chris and PT were able to keep it going. Even though it was only seven innings, still, that's a tough thing to do.
Winter is coming. He had the breaking ball going.
Some I've been working on. I've made some tweaks to it in the past few weeks, and it was good to get out there today and be able to use it, and it was effective.
When he talked about his prep being different for the start rather than coming out of the pen.
Not a whole lot different than any other game, but – I kind of just get warm, do some visualization stuff for the game. Maybe I add in some more soft tissue if I'm starting, because I know I'm going to throw. And then get out there, get warm, get on the mound, and then go time.
All right, so there it is, the combined no-hitter winner, Kaler, and the debuting Pirate pitcher in the game, Parker Thomas. What a way for him to make a collegiate debut, combining on that no-hitter. So ECU was razor sharp. We'll see what happens against Old Dominion coming up at the top of the hour. We'll be joining Scott Rogers and Gary Overton coming up at 5:45 with your coverage and countdown to first pitch here on 94.3 The Game. Yesterday was the final press availability before the Purple Gold spring game for Pirate football, and Mike Houston talked about his excitement for Saturday's Purple Gold game.
Very, very good spring. I told the kids out there, I said, the thing I'm most excited about for Saturday is I want our fan base to be able to see what I'm so excited about. So, you know, we are going to divide up the team, which I hope that doesn't, water us down too much. But I don't think it will. But just really excited about, having an opportunity just to showcase just a little bit of what we've been working on. And, you know, the improvement from day one until today has just truly been drastic.
Coach Houston, on the importance of taking full advantage of every day in the spring, as yesterday they completed the 13th of the 15 allotted workouts.
Knocking off all the newness and getting everybody synced. Defensively, we have so much coming back that it's not as drastic over there with the urgency. Offensively, I mean, you can't waste a day. You know, you only have 15 days. And that's what I was telling the quarterbacks. And, you know, you got 15 days in the spring. We'll have, double that before our opener. You know, so we get a lot of practice in August. But, after Saturday, we can't put on pads and do it again until preseason camp. So, you just want to get the most out of every time you go out there.
So a little over a month ago, the NCAA Football Rules Committee announced the proposal for the optional technology rules, coach-to-player communications through the helmet of one player on the field. Mike Houston discussed that new helmet communication on Tuesday.
The conference sent us four in-helmet mics to use for the last week and this week, just to kind of get used to it. I'm unsure. I think we have four on each side of the ball this fall. But for John David to have the ability to talk directly to the quarterback, for Blake to have the ability to talk to a couple of guys on the field on defense, it really changes, how fast you can do everything. It changes how quickly and how much you can communicate. Now, the thing that we've talked to some NFL people, and the one caution is you don't want to give them too much. You still got to give them the ability to go play, but certainly from a formation alignment, from a tempo, there you can just do so much more than what we have been able to in the past. So it's been fun to use, and I'm sure we'll discover how it best fits us.
All right, I'm going to ask some questions about that in just a second, but let's get through the rest of the Pirate report here. Houston, on where he plans to have his coordinators during the game, the Purple Gold game coming up at 1 o'clock on Saturday.
I mean, we've talked a good bit. I mean, the plan right now is for the coordinators to be up top. It's just, and I know some people don't understand that, but, when I was a coordinator, I prefer being up top just because, you watch film all week preparing for a game, and when you're up in the box, you're kind of insulated from the emotional part of the game, and it's like you're watching film. And so you don't have to have somebody else be your eyes. You can see exactly what happens. You can see where the breakdowns are. You can see where there's some things there that you can take advantage of. If your coordinators are on the field, that's fine as long as they have somebody in the box that they've worked with, they feel comfortable with, and you have to be really, really sharp to be in the box and be able to communicate down to the field what's happening.
And Coach, on when asked if he treats this like a game week,
so I told him, at the beginning of the week, it's game week. So, Thursday, Friday, Saturday will be just like a regular season Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So, and they're all excited about it. Parents are coming into town, Friends are coming into town, so it'll be a lot of excitement. We've got a bunch of recruits coming into town Saturday, so it should be an exciting weekend.
And we will have coverage for you beginning at noon on 94.3 The Game Saturday, a simulcast of, a video presentation that WNCT.com is doing with Jim Zocchi and, hey, Bo, Brian Bailey. How about that? So that's coming up. Pilk, am I dreaming that during the bowl season they experimented with some of the communication from the coaches to the players as far as that helmet communication? I'm not saying they did it for like the big time bowls, but I think there were some bowl games where they did that. Am I dreaming on that, or did that indeed happen?
I can't remember specifically, but I do remember hearing about it. I want to say it maybe it was some of the senior bowl type games where they did
maybe
it.
Maybe that's what it was.
Because I
Google
think,
this pill can yeah. find out because yeah, I'm too lazy it. To do it.
All right.
Google it really quick and see. The other thing, and I think you'll find this interesting, Pilk, the women's basketball game in the championship game for the women's tournament for college basketball outdrew the men's game. It's like 18.7 to 14.8. Now, it's quite obvious that more that many people watched, but a few things, and I'm not trying to be an apologist here. I just think you have to have the whole picture painted for you. Part of the number, a big part of it, comes from the fact that the women's game was over the air television, ABC. It was on ESPN also, but it was on ABC. And it was on 3 in the afternoon on Sunday, and we know Sunday is can tend to be prime sports watching time. You have Caitlin Clark, who was the big story this year, undefeated South Carolina. So there were a lot of things there to drive it. But the fact that it was on with the game's most popular player in the middle of the afternoon, as opposed to the middle of the night on cable, which is what they did with the men's game this year. I don't know what the number is compared to last year. I know that is up from a few years ago when they would have the games on TBS. They also, I think, exercised them on all of the Turner stations, TNT and True TV also. So that's a combined number there. But just shade under 15 for a couple of programs. And I know right now UConn is considered a blue blood, but they don't have the bluest of the blood. I don't think they're a huge national name. They're nationally known, but they're not a draw like Kentucky or Duke or Carolina or Kansas, UCLA, Indiana, that sort of thing. And then Purdue, I mean, obviously known, and they had probably one of the more intriguing players in the game with Edie, but not an awful number. But again, let's credit to what the women's game did this year, because they also drew some big numbers in Caitlin Clark games in the Elite Eight, and then in the first Final Four game against UConn. So it's the Caitlin Clark effect. Did we find out about the communication, Bill?
You were right. I was wrong. There were 6 bowl games that used the player communications, including the Duke's Mayo Bowl between West Virginia and North Carolina.
Ah!
So there wasn't any of the big New Year's 6 games. The article was really long. It didn't just list them boom, 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 but it made it sound like it was all, you know, it was none of the New Year's 6, obviously none of the playoff games. But you were right, Patrick. So I stand corrected.
I like this, though, don't you? I think this is the thing that makes a ton of sense, and not only makes the game, I think it makes it flow smoother. I think it makes it where it will be, and in the efforts to speed up the game is what, you know, they're trying to do. This is one of the ways to do it.
It's long overdue, Patrick.
It's not a 5-hour epic. It's not a 4.5-hour epic now, these college softball football games.
No,
I might have Freudian slip there a moment ago.
No, long overdue.
Combined no hitter, pretty exciting for the Pirates.
7 innings, so a little bit of an asterisk, but nonetheless,
a little bit of again. We're just painting the whole picture here. we're not taking away anything from anybody, but you got to paint the whole picture here.
You do, especially when they had 26 outs a few weeks ago and didn't get credit with a no-hitter because they let up a hit before the final out. And, you know, they only had 21 the other, last night. So.
Had that been 7, it would have been a no-hitter.
Yeah, exactly. So.
2 weeks ago, and they'd be boasting about, too. ECU and ODU tonight. I tell you what, let's get a break. Now, we're going to change gears coming back. Pilk, do you have some golf questions ready? Because Brian Mull is going to be with us.
Some golf questions. Got a little Masters music ready to go.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Not only are we going to – is this the music we can play, by the way? I keep getting emails, and I don't understand this.
the email we got was about something from 2021. So I'm just kind of
Was that because the email was from 2021 and had been locked? Had been in the cloud?
The podcast, whoever we're posting our podcast through, get mad about this stuff, but they're finding stuff from 4 years ago and then they're being upset. So, you know, if they are backtracking stuff from 4 years ago, those people are just crazy and need better things to do with their life.
And they may actually pick up some shows when it was good. Heyo! All right. We're going to take a break because I'm no good, according to some. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, Masters analysis and a little bit of action on who you might want to, you know, place a shekel or two on if you're so inclined. Brian Mull, golf writer extraordinaire, covers the Masters, will be with us.
We have you covered with all the ECU news and beyond that you need for the drive home. The Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Beautiful.
Georgia.
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 Brian Mull joins us.
The whole day through.
Ah, it's a tradition unlike any other. He's going to handicap the Masters for us, give us the latest as far as stories and analysis. Golf writer at large, Brian Mull at BG Mull on X. Follow him there for analysis and observations. All Masters weekend, par three going on today. Hey, Mull, let me ask you a little bit about, let's start with Tiger Woods, described as buff by people that have seen him in the practice rounds. Buff. They have never described me as buff. I'll never be described as buff. You're looking more svelte than buff, but Tiger described as buff. How's Tiger's game coming into Augusta?
Who knows? Really, I mean, each year it seems like we get our hopes up in anticipation that Tiger is going to be more prepared from a competitive golf standpoint entering the Masters, and yet it seems to be less and less for various reasons. Obviously, he was forced to withdraw from the Genesis Invitational at Riviera in California earlier this year when you know, he had a stomach bug and had to walk off the golf course mid-round in the second round. You know, the good news there is it was not related to any of his various physical ailments, but the bad news is it robbed him of an opportunity to get some competitive reps, as he is prone to say. And, you know, there was also some hope that he might play one of the events during the Florida swing, and he said that he just was not ready when asked about that earlier this week. Certainly he is still dealing with, you know, a lot of physical strain on his body every day. And now he shows up at the tournament that he loves the most, has probably meant the most to him, which he has won five times and contended in countless others. Obviously, one he does not want to miss, opportunity to reconvene with old friends and meet new ones, and a place where he still feels like, based on his comments yesterday in the press center, that he can compete. We'll see. I mean, we've seen magical things happen at Augusta with older golfers, whether it be Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson, Ben Hogan, Fred Couples, and even last year, Phil Mickelson. Of course, all of those people were probably in better condition physically than Tiger as far as being able to walk the golf course for 4 days. But there's no doubt he has not been missing arm and chest day very often. And I think it's really a reaction, you know, obviously he wants to look good with his shirt off, but it's a reaction to his weakened lower body. He's not able to use his legs as the engine of his golf swing and his hip speed, which was unprecedented early in his career. He doesn't have that anymore. So he has to overcome that by purely muscling the ball with his upper body. And he certainly knows how to play this golf course as well as anyone. And we'll just see if you know, he can execute.
Brian Mull joining us here on the Patrick Johnson Show. Pirate baseball coming up at the top of the hour against ODU at home. Scotty Scheffler is the odds-on favorite betting-wise to win. Augusta is a second-shot golf course, especially in this day and age of analytics. How does Scheffler's game, where it currently is, stack up heading into the week?
Well, there's a reason that he is the shortest favorite since Tiger. You know, not recent Tiger, but say 2011-12, when you would see Tiger go off at most majors at 3-1 or 4-1. And that's where Scotty's in. That's rarefied air. I mean, it's unusual for any favorite to get into single digits even. And certainly Scotty's play tee to green combined with his course history at Augusta, winning 2 years ago in pretty convincing fashion, and then finishing 10th last year, which is, you know, Augusta's not always been kind to defending champions. There's a lot more obligations, the champions dinner, more media. And, you know, but the side note there is in that 10th place finish last year, Scotty finished dead last in the field in putting. So the ball striking was there. You know, when he has made a mistake in the last few weeks, obviously two wins and a runner-up in his last three starts, and two big boy wins at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, and of course the phenomenal final round he shot to win the Players for the second year in a row. But when he has made a mistake, it's not like a bad golf shot. It's just been like something unlucky or freakish. He three-putted a hole from 5 feet for a double bogey to end a round in Houston a couple of weeks ago. He spun a ball back off the green into the water on a par three. Lost a couple more shots there. So really, when you just it's you can look at Scotty's game and try to find some holes. There aren't any. He's putting better since he switched putters. Rory McIlroy may be kicking himself for making that suggestion on a national television broadcast, because Scotty took it to heart and changed to a mallet style putter. And you know, he doesn't have to be the best putter to win. He just has to putt average, because his ball striking is on a level that we have not seen since peak Tiger Woods. And before that, we had never seen it. It just consistently, he checks all the boxes. And I think that the most underrated or sometimes overlooked aspect of Scotty's game is his course management. He plays well beyond his years. He has an old golfer's brain. He does not take unnecessary risks, but he's unafraid to take a challenge on when necessary. And I think that's exactly the type of game plan and attitude you have to be successful at Augusta National.
The defending champ is Jon Rahm. He was a buzzsaw coming into Augusta last year. He's only played 15 rounds on the LIV Tour this year, but his numbers are not terrible, you know, if you look at the data. So how do you like Rahm's chances going in?
I think John is like the most overlooked, under-mentioned defending champion who's still a world-class player and was certainly not a flukish win by any stretch last year. I mean, why can't Jon Rahm win two in a row? He shot in the 60s in his last six final rounds of the Masters. Were he to do that again this year, he would break the record that he shares with Tom Watson. His scoring average among the golfers in the field at Augusta National is top five. He has not played as much. He has played consistently well on LIV. I mean, he's been a top 10 finisher. And he said yesterday in his press conference that he feels fresher coming in this year. Maybe, you know, not quite as sharp, but he feels mentally fresh. And somehow, as a defending champion, is flying underneath the radar. Some friends of mine that I share some information with who are in the analytics looking for edges type business say that Rahm really should be going off at 9-1. So that kind of tells you the books are even underestimating him. The market's underestimating him as well. So, you know, I would not I would hardly ever tell anyone that, a bet on Jon Rahm's always a pretty solid decision, especially at Augusta National or in a major.
Brian Mull's with us at BG Mull on X. The LIV guys overall, I mean, I know you're a Xander Schauffele guy, and he's been playing pretty well, and you feel good about where he is positioned going into the week starting tomorrow. But for him to be better odds than Brooks Koepka, for example, is baffling. So I look at the LIV guys, DeChambeau, who I still think is fantastic. I mean, he's in the prime physically, just beginning that. you got DJ, who I think physically is better than he was last year going into this. So to me, the LIV guys that are playing, they're playing because they're past champions or have had success in the majors. You can't overlook any of them coming into this, regardless of what the books are saying, right?
Absolutely. And the LIV guys are they're a puzzle, right? Because their data, yeah, they have some data, but it's not up to the par of what we have from the PGA Tour guys via ShotLink. Some of the people who are way smarter than me in data analytics, whom I trust, have said they don't trust the data that's coming from LIV. And it's not apples to oranges because you've got 50 player fields, and you have the quality is the bottom half of those fields. You just don't even know how interested guys are. I mean, Koepka said yesterday that he's been preparing every round of golf he has played and every practice session he's had since December has been preparing not for the tournaments in Jeddah or Miami or wherever they've been, but for the Masters. And so every time he's in a practice session, he's thinking about shots that he's going to need to hit at Augusta. And that shows you where his priority is. I mean, the checks are cashing either way, babe. And but all we have to do is look at last year when the poor, flawed narrative was all of these guys have been on LIV. They don't care anymore. They just took the money bag. And then when the dust settled on Sunday afternoon, you had Mickelson, Koepka, Reed, all in the top five, top eight. And certainly Koepka had a very good opportunity to win the golf tournament. So I think that you're unwise to overlook any of those guys. And going back to your original point with Xander, Xander has been the second best player on the PGA Tour this year by any measure. I think he has six top tens and nine starts. There's no flaws, there's no holes in his game. He's the best all-around player not named Scottie Scheffler on the PGA Tour. However, with the Masters, you cannot just rely on the data. You have to look at the names, and you have to picture them in a green jacket, and you have to think, do they have the stones to finish on the back nine on Sunday when the chips are on the table? And yes, there could be a first-time Masters winner, first-time major winner. That would not be a shock. But I'm trusting Brooks Koepka versus Xander Schauffele head-to-head. And therefore, I think his odds should be shorter. I'm not – if Dustin Johnson is on his game, I may
trust Dustin. He's got a great chance.
Yeah, I may trust Dustin Johnson over Xander Schauffele. That being said, Xander in a top 10 situation, you got to love him.
All right, we're going to get some picks for you here in a second. For those that aren't so inclined to put a little action on the Masters. Any quirks with the course? Anything new this year?
They made a couple of alterations to the two par three greens on the front, the fourth and the sixth. Nothing crazy there. I mean, I think just constantly tweaking. And then they added a new tee box on number two, the par five, which was the players just annihilated last year. I think the intention there was to make the tee shot a little more difficult, bring the bunker into play, force guys to turn their tee shot right to left. But the early returns from the field are that it's really not that big of a change. So, always subtle changes, but nothing that I think is going to affect scoring or the type of player that the course suits.
All right, Moles picks to click if you're going to put a little action on it. And the placement, when we come back right now, Philip Pilkington with a 94.3 The Game Sports Update, and we'll wrap it up with Mole on the other side.
Thanks, Patrick. We will start in Pirate Athletics, where the baseball team had a combined no-hitter over Elon last night, defeating them 12-0 in seven innings. It was thrown by Jaden Winter, Chris Kaler, and Parker Thomas, and Chris Kaler gave his thoughts on the no-hitter after the game.
Chris and PT were able to keep it going, even though it was only seven innings. Still, that's a tough thing to do.
They'll be back in action tonight when they take on Old Dominion. That game will be heard right here after the Patrick Johnson Show at 5:45 with Scott Rogers and Coach Gary Overton. The softball team struggled against nationally ranked Duke as their four-game win streak came to an end last night, 10-1. They will head to Tulsa this weekend for their next conference series. The NFL has announced that the Packers will be the opponent for the Eagles on the first Friday, September 6th of the NFL season, in what will be the first ever NFL game played in Brazil. In Major League Baseball, the 2022 first overall pick, Jackson Holliday, son of Matt Holliday, has been called up for his Major League debut by the Baltimore Orioles as they have designated Tony Kemp for assignment. Could Connor Norby be their next prospect up? Only time will tell. That'll do it for your 94.3 The Game Sports Flash Update and Pirate Report. On the other side of this timeout, we will have more with Brian Mull as the Masters is less than 24 hours away.
And now, the stunning conclusion of the show. It's the P-Man here on 94.3 The Game.
Brian Mull with us here. Brian, who are you on to win this thing?
I like Koepka. Koepka's going to win a green jacket. He's been a second here twice. He played 2 years injured that I think you have to kind of throw out when you look at his record here. I know there's some concerns because he hasn't played great in putter changes, but I trust him. I like Hideki Matsuyama, both outright and in placement. And then going down the board a little bit, some guys like top 20-ish or maybe target them in head-to-heads or guys like Thagala, Shane Lowry, Cameron Young, and Matt Fitzpatrick. And then if you're, a top 10 parlay, I think is a good play this week if you take Scotty, who's minus 200 by himself, and then and pair him with someone else you think is going to finish in the top 10, whether that be Xander or Hideki or Jordan Spieth or whomever you like. You can get some pretty good odds there because, as I said earlier, Scheffler finished dead last in putting last year and still finished 10th. I think that's the floor for him. Obviously, the ceiling is he could win by 7. So right. That could kind of get you that could get you some insurance there, without having to take those negative odds on Scotty by himself. And then a couple of golfers I'm looking to fade that I do not like at all this week. Colin Morikawa, he's just been awful, hit his irons everywhere. And Minwoo Lee fractured his ring finger working out last week. I didn't think this was he's going to try to play anyway. I didn't think this was a great fit for him because of his iron play is a little erratic, even though he has had a good finish here. So I wouldn't be opposed to fading him in a matchup or something of that nature. And honestly, I think that one of the best bets on the board is Tiger to make the cut. He's going for the record. It's around even money, maybe plus money in some markets. He's trying to set the all-time record for consecutive cuts, which he shares with Couples and Player. He didn't come up here from Florida to miss the cut. I mean, his leg will be fine for 2 days, and the weather's going to be around 80 degrees. I don't think they're going to play much Thursday morning because of these storms that are blowing in. I mean, it's going to be – you can't have spectators out there, especially after what happened last year, if the wind's blowing 35 or 40 miles an hour. And so I think he'll get a break there, and I expect Tiger to make the cut. I mean, the cut's going to be 3 or 4 over par. I think he can handle that. Now, how he handles the weekend.
Right, the weekend's different story. Yeah.
That's a different story. But, so that's kind of what I like. And hopefully we get a firm, fast course and some good action Sunday.
How about Mickelson to make the cut?
Yeah, I mean, he'll figure it out. You know, I just trust, like, these guys that know how to play the golf course, they just figure out a way to get to the weekend. And they don't want to pack up their bags and go home. They want to be around, and they want to hear those ovations Sunday afternoon that the defending, past champions always receive from the patrons. And, there's a third of this field that has no chance to make the cut. And 50 golfers are going to make it out of 90. So I like Phil's chances.
Yeah. Hey, Brian, good stuff. Really good stuff. Appreciate it very much. Enjoy the golf this weekend. Follow him on Twitter at BG Mull on X to get the observations and reporting and analysis. Enjoy it, my friend.
Always a pleasure. Everybody enjoy the Masters. Enjoy the weekend.
There he goes, Brian Mull. Thank you very much. Great to have him on with us here. Did you pick up anything, Pilk, on that? Did you get anything? Was that a useful segment for you potentially, Pilk?
Oh, it was. It's always useful when we get Brian on for some golf, and it's even more useful now that sports betting's legal. I like his Thagala thing there. I saw him. He's plus money to go top 20. One of my friends has him on his fantasy team, and he's been carrying his fantasy team as it is. Now, he's been beating some of the big dogs. Now you got to beat all the big dogs. few more guys in the field, but hey, I like it. He's been consistent and good iron play.
I don't know about Bryant, you know, because Mickelson could either finish top five or not make the cut. But yeah, I do like what he, said about Tiger. Tiger's going to figure out a way to get to the weekend. Might not win it, may not be there on Sunday, but he's going to figure out a way to get to the weekend.
He might be in the first group off on Sunday, but he's going to be in the weekend.
Yeah. He'll be on the week. He'll get to the weekend. I also, this is the final Masters for Vern Lundquist. How about that? Thanks to Brian Mull for being with us. Good stuff. Good stuff. Masters begins tomorrow. Very excited about it. Can't wait. We're going to hit a break and then get ready for Pirate Baseball coming your way. It'll be East Carolina and Old Dominion as the Pirates are coming off that combined no-hitter. Scotty Scooter Rogers and Dr. Gary Overton, the coach, will have the call for you on radio, and that'll be coming up. Thanks to Philip the Ref Pilkington as well. Back tomorrow in the morning on Talk of the Town, and here at 5, the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game, 94.3thegame.com, and the IBX Media app. Go Pirates against ODU, and have a great evening, everybody.